This Israel Report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are we feeling this morning?
Boker Tov, Moadim L'Simcha. Yes, momentous. Momentous, I think, is the way that we feel at the moment. A little nervous still about whether all of this is really going to happen, but obviously the announcement by the president, by President Trump in the middle of the night, was the first notification that came through to say an agreement has been reached. Since then, both Prime Minister Netanyahu and Hamas have put out statements confirming that from their perspective, agreements have been reached. Prime Minister Netanyahu said that cabinet meeting will be convened today in order to approve the agreement, which we understand is due to be signed in the next 2.5 to 3 hours, literally like that. And my understanding is that once the agreement is signed in the next few hours, there will be 72 hours. The clock will begin to tick on the 72 hours to release the hostages. There is still a lot of information coming out, and we're not quite sure exactly how to interpret everything. But my understanding is that the first stage will involve the release of the live hostages, thereafter followed by those who have been deceased. President Trump is reported already to have contacted some of the hostage families to advise that their loved ones will come home. Wow. He said by Monday.
Wow.
But the 72-hour clock really ends on Sunday. And we can't lose the significance of Monday being Simchat Torah.
Yeah.
Because, oh, sorry, Erev Simchat Torah. Erev Simchat Torah, because obviously that really completes the 2-year cycle in the Jewish calendar from the moment that all of this began. There is a lot of post-mortem to look at, to consider the war, to consider what has led to this moment, what has been influential in driving this agreement now rather than earlier, or maybe not at all. We understand that, the IDF has already made major preparations at Camp Re'im, which is along the Gaza border, for the receipt of the hostages, for the hostages to come over and to be received there. We understand that the camp has already been prepared with personal items for each of the hostages who are due to come home, the live hostages who we understand will be coming home, hygiene equipment, clothing, and of course, there will be arrangements made for them to meet their loved ones when they eventually come home. We're expecting that they are not going to be in good shape. So, of course, medical facilities right away. But their preparations at Camp Re'im, I understand, are almost complete and ready for those hostages to come home. So we are going into an emotional roller coaster now of the next few days. First of all, with the signing of the agreement, we understand that President Trump himself will be due to come out to be here over the weekend. So there is a certain level of very, very cautious optimism, excitement. The location in Tel Aviv, which has become the focal point for the hostages, which is called Hostage Square, has been alive with activity since the early hours in the morning when the news was announced that an agreement has been reached. This has really been the moment that they've been waiting for the last 2 years, to hear that eventually Hostage Square will no longer need to be Hostage Square, although I rather suspect that will forever be hostage free. I don't think that we will ever be able to dismantle the significance of that location, what it meant and what's happened over the last 2 years. So, yes, we are excited, but very, very cautious. We know that the beast that we're dealing with can't be trusted. And so we just need to be very, very careful about how we build our expectations. But certainly the indications now are fairly clear that an agreement has been reached and that there will be some good news, I hope, coming out over the weekend.
What's fascinating is that discussion around Hostage Square, and I imagine that it will morph more into some kind of a museum commemoration, because I can't imagine it ever being known as anything else other than Hostage Square. You know,
I absolutely agree.
Yeah.
I mean, that location has become such a significant part of Tel Aviv. I don't think that we can ever go back to calling it anything else. I don't think that location will have any other significance. It reminds me a little bit of the square that is now called Rabin Square in Tel Aviv. And that used to just be a square which was outside the municipality building. It used to be called Kikar Malchei Yisrael once upon a time, before 1995, before the Rabin assassination. And of course, not only was it renamed Rabin Square because of what happened, but when you go there, when anybody goes there, the first time you take a visitor to that particular location, there is only one thing that you can talk about that happened at that square. And I think the same will be true of Hostage Square, which has been renamed as such because of obviously the activities that have happened there. And it'll always be some sort of a commemoration, not only to those who have suffered for the last 2 years, but of course to those who have perished along the way, those who are not so fortunate to be coming home alive. So there's so many things that we're going to need to kind of internalize once this next few days is over, or these next few days are over. We'll begin to internalize the significance of this war, how the war led to this moment, if indeed it contributed to us reaching this right now, whether things might have been done differently in order to reach this moment sooner. We still have elections next year where the Prime Minister will be judged for the failures and potentially also for some of the successes of this war. And I think that it's important for us to also recognize that for Israel, this war is a victory. And the reason that I say that it's a victory, in spite of some of the real setbacks and the losses of life and the immense suffering that we've been through, the reason that I say it's a victory is because if it was a loss, we wouldn't be here. So for Israel, losing a war means effectively giving up our right to exist as a Jewish state here. Winning means staying here and continuing our fight to build a Jewish nation. And unfortunately, those victories come at a massive price, and we lose a great deal along the way, as long as ultimately we can declare victory and remain here and be here, because there is no clearer indication than we've received over the last couple of years that we continuously suffer a risk of annihilation, that there is a desire to remove us from living here or potentially living anywhere. And so a loss means that we lose that right, and a victory means we retain it. And I see those two factors in black and white. I think it's very, very simple. Of course, the victories are very expensive and very painful, and our country will never be the same again. And potentially the world Jewry will never be the same again.
I was talking to listeners earlier, and I was asking them the question or talking about it, and I'd love to hear from them. Do you think we'll ever be the same again? I can tell you unequivocally, I will not be. I will not easily get over the betrayal that I have felt on a very personal level, on a religious level, on a national level, that I have felt over the past 2 years. Never, ever will I get over it. And in truth, I don't think I should. I don't think we should, because that's why we landed up in the position in the first place.
Well, for me, the main point, Howard, is that I didn't expect that something like this could really ever happen. When we were in the period before the war and, you know, we were going through some internal turmoil and disagreements and things like that, and I've had numerous discussions over many years about Israel's status in the international community, and my take on the situation before the war was that I think that the international community has begrudgingly accepted. And when I say the international community, I meant the Arab world immediately surrounding Israel as well, that they begrudgingly accepted that Israel is here to stay. I don't think that that is still my view today. I think that there was still a community, there was still a certain group of countries and group of people who felt that we could be removed by force from here, that we did suffer an existential threat, that we do suffer an existential threat. I didn't honestly believe that that existential threat really existed, but I've changed my mind about that in the view of events that have happened. So I never expected any of this. And to be fair, when October the 7th came on Sukkot, and Israel in the evening, once this Sukkot Chag was out, had a memorial ceremony to those almost 1,300 people who were killed on October the 7th. There was a huge ceremony that took place in Yarkon Park in Tel Aviv to memorialize those, because that is really a very, very sad day for us. But what would really confuse me was the pro-Palestinian people who were marching through the streets of foreign capitals marking October the 7th. What were they marking? They certainly weren't mourning for those whose lives were lost on October the 7th. So why were they marching through the streets with Palestinian flags in capitals in the US, in Europe? Why were they doing that? It can only be for one reason: to celebrate what happened on October the 7th, to mark it as a momentous occasion, not from the perspective of the suffering that we had to endure, but potentially from the semi-victory that was obtained on October the 7th. Now, if 2 years later, people can still march through the streets of Western capitals, commemorating idolizing an event like that that took place, then I think we need to understand where we are in this world and who's who and what the international community view us. Because when I saw those people commemorating and shouting victory and calling for a global intifada and calling for a repeat on October the 7th, I think that we just simply cannot ignore that. And it wasn't only the people who were marching and commemorating it. It was the police of the host countries that were just marching alongside them, allowing all of this to happen in plain view.
Yeah, it is just absolutely remarkable. Before I let you go, let's just quickly talk about the cost. Who and what do we know about the release of Palestinian prisoners?
So the release of Palestinian prisoners is certainly going to be very, very painful for Israel, because there are some quite dangerous Palestinian prisoners whose names are on the list for release as part of this agreement. Two names that we understand are not on the list are those of Marwan Barghouti, whose name was mentioned as a potential released prisoner as part of this deal, and Israel has said no to that. And he's certainly, let's say, the kind of most idolized prisoner in Israeli prisons right now. And the other name who will apparently not be released is Saadat, who is also sort of celebrated among the Palestinians, Ahmad Saadat, They both have blood on their hands. They were both responsible for the murders of many Israelis. However, there is one, Ibrahim Hamed, who is currently serving 54 life sentences in an Israeli prison for his part in the Second Intifada. And we understand that he will be released as part of this agreement, along with many, many, many other prisoners who have blood on their hands from terror acts, many of whom were involved in October the 7th. And since then, many, many people will be released. That is a discussion for itself. We will certainly have the opportunity to talk a little bit more about that.
It is 8:01. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. Wishing you a Shabbat Shalom. And we'll catch you on Monday morning.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.